This is a throwdown, a showdown. Hell no, Rob Fay Nation can't slow down. It's gonna go.
Boom! Look at, he's out cold.
The greatest pound for pound fighter.
The cream of the crop.
What is going on? I am Rob Fay. Welcome to your Tuesday edition of Sports Bar Radio. Coming off a long weekend here in Canada, and we've got a boatload of stuff to get to. This might be one of the busiest first segments of this show ever, because we've got everything from the three-day-long weekend, and we've got a boatload of stuff coming up this week that before you even get to next weekend, you're going to need a break. And I understand, but what's really cool about this show is, in addition to me getting you caught up and everything and setting the table for what's still to come, we've got a fantastic pair of guys coming through. And I'll tell you what, if you're into e-gaming, if you're into sports gambling, if you are into anything that has to do with the monetization of a new industry, Thomas Rosander and Quentin Martin, the CEOs of Luckbox, I promise you, if you're into gaming, this is an absolute must-listen-to segment. We'll have them at about 15 minutes time, letting you know of the wild, wild west when it comes to gambling online. And we're not talking about football, baseball, basketball, hockey. We're talking about video games and gaming. Oh, I know, to some of us a little longer in the tooth, it seems almost surreal, but this industry is absolutely breaking through the glass ceiling, and I promise you, both Thomas and Quentin will get you locked in on a completely new world just minutes from now. All right, there is one story, and I think you know where I'm going with this one when it comes to you NHL fans. Vancouver Canuck Nation is sitting back in their chair with a stogie saying, oh, okay, maybe it wasn't that bad after all. Let's get you to the lead.
We've scoured the globe for the stories that matter to you. Okay, well, let's be honest, Rob picks most of the stories, so maybe they matter more to him? Anyways, pull up a chair and let our bartender pour you a cold one, because there's a lot going on in your world today.
So the Edmonton Oilers last night got bounced from the NHL playoffs. They had the two best players when it came to the scoring race in the entire league, and they got ousted in four straight by the Winnipeg Jets. Now, I could sit here and dissect Edmonton's four straight losses and tell you how crappy they are and go on and go forward. But realistically, if you're a Vancouver Canuck fan, you should be alarmed, because the reality is right now is Edmonton, obviously top heavy, they don't have enough depth to compete come playoff time. Sound familiar? As much as we missed the playoffs this year and we weren't ready for the playoffs, and you can blame COVID, you can blame bad management, bad contracts, whatever, insert problem here. Vancouver, here is the bigger concern. Even if we were to get in the playoffs, even if we got into the playoffs this year, it would have had to be the same recipe. You would have needed Elias Pettersson to do something crazy, or Brock or Bo. Somebody would have had to go above and beyond, and you would have needed Bubble Demko again. That is unfortunately not a recipe for success. Now, Edmonton, you can say that it's a blown tire by their defense. You could say that it's crappy goaltending. You could say they don't have secondary scoring, and you would be right across the board. But as you're building here in Vancouver, let's remember something. The challenges that they have in Edmonton, there are a handful of challenges that ring true here in Vancouver as well. So which is the team that you're looking to build? Who is the prototypical team out there beyond Vegas and Colorado and Tampa Bay, who we know are built for the right now? If you were looking at the Vancouver Canucks saying, okay, Jim Benning said I need another 2 to 3 years, I'm not going to get into that. But realistically, you can go a couple of different ways here. You can find balance, or you can go top heavy and roll the dice like Edmonton's done. Here is why I bring this up, and I don't know if this is necessarily worthy of the lead, but on the heels of Edmonton getting ousted, it is a template in real time for Vancouver Canuck fans to decide what direction they want to go. Do they want to be a team that is fast and furious up front, but they have hollow and porous defense, and hopefully their goaltender can stand on their head? Or do they want to maybe balance the offense up front, maybe not be as potent, but solidify their defensive core and make sure that Thatcher's got all the support that they want? You can't do this right now solely through the draft. You're going to have to make some changes. This is going to be a heart-wrenching moment for Vancouver Canuck fans who are just hell-bent on the fact that they've got this great core. And I don't know if there's a lot of pieces out there on the secondary and third markets where they're going to be able to take Roussels and Sutters off of your hands. The bottom line is those contracts are eventually just going to have to wither like a brown leaf on a tree. But you may have to part with one of your core. Guys, I've been saying this for weeks. I've been saying this for months. Hell, I've been saying it for years on my old show on TSN. We have to know that the way that we're building this team right now, which is top heavy, isn't going to succeed in the postseason. Case in point, the Edmonton Oilers. And I know what you're saying. It's their goaltending that was shitty. We have better goaltending. We're going to be just fine. You have to strike balance. You can't just win in the draft, or you can't just win in free agency. You have to have lines that can roll. Like, look at Winnipeg, for example. Here's a team that in the last, what, 6 or 7 months, decided that they were going to trade Patrick Laine for Pierre-Luc Dubois. Dubois hasn't exactly been a force in Winnipeg, but you know what's made them good? Nick Ehlers, Wheeler, a balanced team that's got a couple of B's as opposed to a couple of A's and then a bunch of C's. This is a team that is well coached, has a little bit of balance, and plays playoff-style hockey, which is feisty. They beat you to the puck. They play the 200-foot game. That's the template that Vancouver's got to aspire to get to. But in order to get there, they may have to lose a piece in order to get a couple of pieces back. I know what you're saying. You don't want to break that core. You don't want to touch that core. And it's funny because everybody's linked to somebody. You can't trade Brock because that'll piss off Elias because they're best friends. You don't want to trade Hughes for fear that he might end up becoming a generational defenseman. You don't want to trade the captain because it's Bo Horvat and hell, he's the captain. You don't want to trade JT Miller because Lightning... See what I'm saying? There's always a reason and a heart tug, a heartstring that's going to make you want that player to stay. But as we've seen with the Edmonton Oilers just last night, you cannot build your team top heavy, because if that other team, the tenacious team, is able to shut down that line, then you are completely exposed the rest of the way. And I can tell you this, Bubble Demko was 3 games. If you would have put Thatcher Demko in that same situation in Edmonton, I can tell you this. He might have been able to steal you 1 game, but the way that they are built, that porous defense in Edmonton outside of Darnell Nurse, I just looked at that whole series and I said to myself, boy, Vancouver is trending this way. They might want to pull the saddle back a little bit and try to go down the road that the Jets have done. So stop worrying about Tyler Toffoli and the guys that we weren't able to sign. Forget about the fact that we were looking at Oliver Ekman-Larsson and everything from a season ago. You're not going to find a wonder kid in this year's draft. You're not going to be able to find 3 more Vasily Pakulzins, Jack Rathbones, Nils Höglanders all at the same time. You may have to trade one of your pieces if you truly want to stop this trajectory, go back and build it properly. The Canucks look a lot more like Edmonton than they do Winnipeg. Hit me up on that. Do you agree? Do you disagree? Should I just shut my mouth or do you say preach, brother? Either way, I want to hear from you on Twitter. Hit me up at Rob Fay, which is R-O-B, F as in Frank, A-I, and let's get down to business. Let's talk a little sports today, all right? Okay, again, just minutes away from 2 guys that I am absolutely smitten we're going to be having on this show, Thomas Rosander and Quentin Martin. You want to unlock the key to a whole new gambling world? These 2 gentlemen from Luckbox are going to help you with that in about 10 minutes time. But before we get to those 2 fine CEOs, let's get you to the rest of the news of the day. Not just what's happened, but still what's coming up. 10 minutes, 10 stories, 10 topics. Come on, man. You got to comb the hair. You got to look good. You got to play the role, because I'm not just taking you to any part of this sports bar. I am taking you, brother, into the VIP room.
You knew tonight was going to be a good night, didn't you? Guys, the ladies don't want you wasting their time, so get to the point. 10 topics, 10 minutes. Hold on to your drinks, because we're about to bring you the entire world of sports before the DJ can pull out the vinyl for his next set. Welcome to the VIP room.
All right, so let's finish up the NHL talk here and just talk about where we stand heading into tonight's games. 3 teams have advanced. Colorado swept the Blues. As I mentioned, the Oilers got swept by Winnipeg. And the only other team that has advanced already, Boston, needed 5 games, but they got past Alexander Ovechkin and the Washington Capitals. So those are the 3 teams that are in. A couple of teams looking to close things out very soon. Tampa Bay leading the Florida Panthers 3-2, and Vegas leading Minnesota 3-2. Toronto, after losing John Tavares in Game 1 of that series against Montreal, have come back with a couple of big wins. Jack Campbell in net, becoming a folklore hero in Toronto as we speak. And Carolina and Nashville locked at 2 games apiece. So, eventually, we could see, within the next couple of hours, both Tampa Bay and the Vegas Knights punch their ticket. I don't think anybody would be surprised if either of those teams advanced to the round of 8. Carey Price is starting to come around, saying that he thinks the Canadiens will start scoring against the Maple Leafs. He said that briefly after Game 3. They have 4 goals in their first round series, 1 in each of those 2 consecutive losses. And yet Carey Price giving his teammates a vote of confidence, saying that it will come around, they've just got to stay the course. Carolina could get a boost in their series, which looks like it could go 6 or 7, as Jakub Slavin could play against Nashville in their game tonight. The defenseman taking part in the morning skate, he's missed the last 3 games with a lower body injury after logging more than 20 minutes in Game 1, which just happened to be a 5-2 victory. And after the Capitals got ousted in 5 games by the Boston Bruins, Zdeno Chara saying that he's going to take a little bit of time as to whether or not he's going to come back for his 24th NHL season. He's now 44, he is the oldest player in the league, and he's about to become a free agent on July the 28th. Must have been weird having to get bounced by Boston, the team that he's spent so many years with. Chara left the Bruins after 14 seasons, signing that 1-year deal just under $800,000 back in December because the Caps were willing to offer him more than just a regular role. I'm not sure what's going to happen with Zdeno, but he did leave his wife and his family in Boston while he played in Washington this year, and I would imagine that that will be a part of his consideration as he makes his decision about his future in the coming weeks. Alexander Ovechkin, speaking of contracts, confident that he'll sign and finish his NHL career with the Washington Capitals. He said he wants to stay in Washington after a 3rd straight exit from the playoffs early on. 35 years old, he's an unrestricted free agent this year, and I doubt it's really about money at this point. You remember back in 2008, he signed that 13-year, $124 million contract, which has finally come to its conclusion. And if you remember, despite missing 11 games this season, which is the most he's ever missed in a season, he had 24 goals and right now is knocking on the door. He's 1 behind Marcel Dion for 5th in NHL history. This season, he already passed Mike Gardner and Phil Esposito to move from 8th into 6th. He also scored 9 power play goals. He's got 269 of those over his career and has chosen not to play for Russia at the IIHF World Championships because he's got a leg injury that he said didn't affect him during the playoffs, but he definitely wants to heal that one up. All right, off to the association we go. They got 3 games on the calendar tonight, and all of them are really good games. You got Brooklyn Nets getting ready to host the Boston Celtics. Clippers and Mavs are going to do the dance again, this one from Los Angeles, as the Lakers are in Phoenix getting ready to battle Devin Booker and Chris Paul, who looks like he's going to be in the lineup tonight, and they will need him if they're going to get past the late show. Phoenix leads this series 1-0, as they beat the Lakers in Game 1, 99-90. LeBron going for 18, Devin Booker went for 34. Brooklyn Nets' Kevin Durant had 32. Speaking of guys that got 30-plus in Game 1, they took care of the Celtics in Game 1, 104-93. Jason Tatum had 22 in a losing cause for Boston. But there are a lot of people right now that are saying for Brooklyn, this is an all-in or bust season. They lead the series 1-0, but what I find really engaging is the pressure that is put on Brooklyn and first-year coach Steve Nash, who a lot of people weren't sure if he was going to be able to guide this team with all of those weapons, but he has been able to do that and then some. And right now, Brooklyn is riding hot. They came into the postseason riding a 4-game winning streak, which included 2 victories in Boston. Well, one of the great stories in recent memory on the PGA Tour happening this past weekend at the PGA Tour Championship, Father Time, no match for Phil Mickelson, who at 50 years old was able to hold off Louis Oosthuizen, Brooks Koepka, and the rest of the field to claim his latest major. The event on Sunday drew 6.5 million viewers, and it felt like there were 6.5 million people on the course there. Chaotic, a lot of energy. He was walking up to 18, trying to put the finishing touches on a historic PGA Championship victory, and it was just chaos behind him. Fans were storming the fairway, everybody trying to get a look, snapping cell phone photos, and it did get a little out of hand. And now, the golf course has admitted that they were simply overwhelmed by the moment. even though Phil was feeling pretty good about his victory, where he was able to embrace his family and move on, Brooks Koepka, you could tell, after his match, was really on edge. Koepka saying that he got bumped in the knee a few times, getting caught up in that crowd, and that his caddy, Ricky Elliott, got, quote, drilled in the face. Late last night, the PGA of America CEO Seth Waugh released a statement admitting that fans overdid it just a bit and that he has spoken to both Mickelson and Koepka to extend an apology. But again, at age 50, Lefty picks up another major. Well, in the UFC, one of the most feistiest divisions is the lightweights. And in an interview recently with MMA Fighting just days after becoming the second Brazilian to ever claim that lightweight title, Charles Oliveira discussed the picture right now where he knows there are four or five guys that are all vying for that strap around his waist. He says he expects to face the winner of the Dustin Poirier-Conor McGregor 3 match, and that he doesn't believe that the shadow of Khabib looms over his reign. Oliveira has been calling for a fight with McGregor for years, and even went on social media to tease that fight as soon as he beat Michael Chandler, probably knowing that Mystic Mac is the payday that everybody in that division wants, because Mystic Mac brings the eyes to the pay-per-view. Well, yesterday was Monday Night Raw, despite it being a long weekend here, but this one kind of swept under the carpet. The WWE and Adnan Virk have mutually agreed to part ways, and the WWE thanked Adnan for his work. If you remember, Adnan, one of the mainstream players when it comes to sports media, was all of a sudden snapped up by the World Wrestling Entertainment Company, and it has only been weeks, and now all of a sudden Adnan is on the outside looking in. That was a little bit of a surprise, considering how much the WWE was saying that it was a coup that they were able to get him. Well, I'm not sure if it was premeditated or not, but Julio Jones going on Shannon Sharpe's show the other night and then admitting that he wants out of Atlanta is now front and center, saying, quote, I'm out of there. Jones has been looking for a way out for some time, according to NFL Network insider Ian Rappaport, asking the franchise for a trade months ago, and that the team has admitted that they would be willing to pursue one. So the question is, which of those teams would be on the radar for the Atlanta Falcons and Julio Jones? Well, the top five, according to NFL.com, include the Patriots, the Cleveland Browns, the Indianapolis Colts, the 49ers, and the Las Vegas Raiders. Raiders are part of the conversation because whenever it comes to a big-name veteran, they are always there. If you remember, they kicked tires and actually acquired Antonio Brown for the Pittsburgh Steelers, and they do need a little bit more help for Derek Carr as they try to show that they are a contender in that conference, which is not an easy road for them at this time. And finally, localizing this in the world of baseball, Alek Manoah, the former Vancouver Canadian from just a couple of seasons ago, has been promoted by the Toronto Blue Jays. He's going to set up shop and make his Major League debut this coming Wednesday, tomorrow, and do so at Yankee Stadium in New York. He's a long way from the University of West Virginia, dominant for the Vancouver Canadians in the brief innings that he's here. He's only pitched a handful of innings in the minor leagues, but the way that he has absolutely just disintegrated hitters at AAA, there was no reason to keep him down at this point, considering all the struggles that the Toronto Blue Jays are facing right now. And boy, are the Toronto Blue Jays waning, despite the fact that Vladdy Jr. is playing at an all-time high, despite the fact there's a couple of bright lights. It has been dim times for the Toronto Blue Jays, who gave up 7 runs in the bottom of the 11th inning the other day to top Toronto 14-7. All of a sudden, you look at the Toronto Blue Jays, who were hanging out near the top of the American League East. You wake up this morning, Toronto all of a sudden 5.5 games out of the conversation. They have lost 6 in a row and now getting ready to take on a team in the New York Yankees that have won 6 in a row. And that, of course, on the heels of just finishing up a series with Tampa Bay, who have now won 11 in a row. So let's just say the beasts of the East are starting to show their real teeth and Toronto is falling by the wayside in a hurry. But again, the bright light, the silver lining is at former Vancouver Canadian Alek Manoah. He's going to try to go to New York and help the Blue Jays stop the bleeding there. All right, let's take our break. When we come back, we're going to switch gears. Did you know that you can gamble and you can place bets on video games? Meaning that you can be watching a live stream of a video game and heck, you can play some money on it. I could sit here and try to explain it, but let me bring in two guys who are absolute industry leaders in this field, Thomas Rosander and Quentin Martin. They are the CEOs of Luckbox. They join me on the other side of these commercials. I'm Rob Fay, and you're listening to Tuesday's edition of Sports Bar Radio, as always presented to you by Equity Guru.
You're listening to Sports Bar Radio with Rob Fay, brought to you by Equity Guru. Equity Guru, investment information for millennials and Mad Men.
This segment is brought to you by Diagnose. Diagnose is a Canadian biotech company that uses eye scans and artificial intelligence to detect a variety of medical conditions remotely without the need for a doctor's visit. They're currently operating in 16 countries with 131 screening sites and just announced a move into Europe. Their ticker symbol is ADK. For more information about Diagnose, visit www.equity.guru.
Welcome back to Sports Bar Radio with host Rob Fay, brought to you by Equity.guru.
All right, welcome back to Sports Bar Radio, your Tuesday edition. I am Rob Fay. I am so happy, man. It's been a couple of days since we've been together. It's you miss this show. Like, you have your usual weekends, the Friday, the Saturday, the Sunday. But when you add just even that one extra day, it matters. So I don't know, maybe you can hear the energy, but I am thrilled to be here, and I am thrilled to be in the sports bar with two gentlemen who really, in their industry, need no introduction. Thomas Rosander and Quentin Martin are the CEOs of a company called Luckbox that right now is amongst the industry leaders when it comes to providing gamers with the best esports betting opportunities, and they cover all of the major video game competitions. It is amazing to me that within the last year, guys, you weren't even a publicly traded company, and despite the pandemic, despite all of the challenges that you faced, you actually, over the last, I would say, year, have found yourself in a pretty good space. Gentlemen, good afternoon. Can you walk me through your last year when it comes to all the challenges and yet the fact you've been able to navigate those waters?
Yeah, esports itself survived COVID pretty well, and esports betting even more so. You know, there were some tournaments cancelled, but esports betting with traditional sports gone, it was booming. So at Luckbox, we saw substantial growth throughout the early pandemic and the first few lockdowns, and we kind of managed to capitalize on that timing by raising some funds and taking the company public on the TSXV.
When you think about those moments leading up to going public, I think everybody goes through that moment of reflection where you're thinking to yourself, oh my God, am I doing the right thing? Did you have that moment, or between Thomas and yourself, were you guys clearly ready to make that jump?
We absolutely had that moment. You know, the decision to go public was, should we, shouldn't we? Should we go stay private? Should we sell? You know, there's uncertainty. I'd never taken a company public before, and there was a big learning curve. It wasn't easy. But, you know, it was very rewarding when we got there. And in March this year, we closed our first fund round since going public, and about just under 18 million. And I have to say it was substantially easier and quicker than raising privately. So feeling quite happy with where the company's placed right now, particularly I think we're only the third publicly traded esports betting company globally. So it puts us in quite a good position. And yeah, definitely worth it.
So Thomas, let's talk about it. To the naive ear, what exactly is Luckbox?
Luckbox is an esports betting platform. We're live in over 80 countries. And so basically what that means is that we provide odds and streams for people who want to bet on esports.
To some, you always think of sports, quote unquote, betting as basketball, soccer, football, hockey. Whereas now you can bet on everything online and the e-gaming platform, which is still relatively new to certain people. Were you scared that that trend wouldn't catch on, or did you know that you were catching lightning in a bottle?
I can tell you the story when I realized that esports was going to be absolutely huge. And it was back in 2011. I was at Gamescom in Cologne, which is a huge gaming fair. And I was there with Electronic Arts, and we had this huge place in one of the halls of the fair, and all the big ones are there, like the Activision Blizzards and so on, the Ubisofts, and all of them are there trying to get the attention. And I was walking in one of the big hallways there, and there is one hall that is the biggest one in the whole fair, and I was like, we have to see what's there, because we could hear the sounds coming out from that hall. And walking in there, and it's just the whole place is built into a big arena. And it's like coming into a really intense derby in a football game or basketball or whatever. And it's Riot's League of Legends tournament going on in there. It just blew my mind. I was like, this is going to be enormous. And now it is. It's a huge thing moving, and it makes so much sense because there is one third of the population on Earth pretty much play video games. So obviously it was going to be big. And for those who doesn't really understand what I'm talking about, like esports, that is organized competitive gaming. That's what it is.
And there's a lot of investors, Quentin, that are making big strides to put together teams. Like here in Vancouver, a couple of years ago, Francesco Aquilini, who owns the Vancouver Canucks, which is the prize sports entity in Vancouver, went out and created the Titans. And there was a lot of people in my demographic, mid-40s, that were kind of like, why would you buy a video game company? Then all of a sudden you go down to the stadium, which is usually 18,000 hockey fans, and there was 18,000 gaming fans. So this is a major trend that has some big time investors looking and getting in on this. And your platform really runs parallel with the excitement that we're seeing globally, no?
100%. I mean, I've watched the Canucks play in that stadium myself when I lived in Vancouver. Brilliant time. For me, the stat that I always come back to, which we came across whilst we were researching kind of the vision in the first place, was that 18 to 25 year olds or Generation Z, they watch, not play, they watch more computer games than they do traditional sports. Esports is very much a generational phenomenon. You know, there's a reason why 60-year-olds aren't that into it, because they didn't grow up in households with computer games. But anyone who's 35 and younger did. So, you know, it's already starting to take over in those demographics. All the same passions come through. You know, you love your team, you love watching a game that maybe you've played and are quite good at, but you like watching the people who are amazing at it, whose touch is magical, who do things that you can only dream of. And you follow them, and you know, all the same passion points and trigger points that work for sports work for esports.
When you see these video games, it's one thing to watch it. It's another thing to actually bet on it. And it's another thing to engage with it on that front. But it's such an unknown quantity, and there's always security issues that you guys will probably have to manage with that. Was there fear when that came about?
This is, and people are saying like there's collusion and risk for fraud and so on. The thing is that it's so much easier to detect when it's a video game rather than on traditional sports, because when it is a video game, basically every pixel movement of what's happening in the game can be tracked. And it's very easy to actually see, and there are robots and models and stuff for that, like finding these things. So it can very easily automatically be detected on an early stage if something is out of the normal. While if it's a boxing fight or even a football game, if somebody's pretending to get knocked out or accidentally make a self goal or whatever it can be, you know, it's much harder to identify. So from that sense, from a technology point of view, it's much safer with this type of gaming, I would say.
The passion to bet on something that you enjoy, whether it's because you think you know better than the bookies, whether you think because you want to enhance your pleasure of the spectatorship, or whether you want to prove a mate wrong. I think the psychology behind that is the same again as with sports. And you know, we've been betting since we came out of caves, you know, hundreds of thousands of years ago. We're going to keep betting, you know. And I think combined with that, esports is quite a nascent industry. And you know, a lot of people think it's just kids. Our average bettor is 32 years old, for example. So, you know, I think it's really important to realize that these are generations that enjoy betting on things, and betting traditionally monetizes sports more than any other industry. And we can see the same thing already occurring in esports, where betting is already the single largest revenue stream in a high growth industry. So, you know, I think we're already seeing the fruits of that labor from ourselves and some of our competitors. So it's really encouraging.
Were you surprised at how quickly people caught on to Luckbox? Like I'm looking at your numbers here, and the trajectory is startling almost. Like how quickly since 2018, when this came to fruition, to where we are having this conversation, those numbers are pretty significant.
COVID really accelerated us, but you know, we were a small fry company, the size there. So it's easy to show such high growth of those early numbers. You know, I think Thomas can definitely talk more about it, but you know, we're looking at fairly steady growth in line with the space. And something that we're looking to accelerate as and when we find the right opportunities. But I'll definitely let Thomas talk about, you know, what growth looks like going forward.
I mean, COVID gave a boost. I think in general it dropped down a little bit after, but not that much. If we speak about Luckbox in particular, I mean, as you know, we raised a lot of money now. We have our pockets full, so we're not in a hurry, and we are committed to really take this all the way. So we are carefully gonna increase our growth and our marketing spend during this year, and we have a lot of exciting stuff coming. Yeah, we will see some numbers during the year, but it's still something that what the whole industry is concerned about now is like, how do you introduce betting to this new generation, the video game players. And the traditional sports book, who basically added esports just because they couldn't provide traditional sports during the pandemic, they claim that, no, it's not worth it. Like, we're not making much out of these players. It's too difficult. And the reason why it's so difficult for them is because they are applying exactly the same product, the same way, the same marketing message as they do for traditional sports. And as Quentin pointed out, we're targeting 18 to 35 years olds here, and it's their mindset's completely different. They used to play video games. You can't hit them with a website that looks like an Excel sheet with just odds and matches listed. You have to present it to them in a way that they're used to, much more engaging experience. You have to present it to them in that way. That's what we are doing, and that's our edge, and that's what's going to make all the difference, or is making all the difference.
Probability is a word that I think comes up often in our field. For example, Quentin, when I was looking at the fact that you played poker for as long as you did, and you were into magic and all the different things that you built before you got to this moment, it all comes back to the same word, probability. And how can you tip the scales towards you? Is that essentially the foundation for what Luckbox is trying to educate those who are placing bets with you on the best possible probabilities?
I think it's about being a gamer at a core. You know, all those skills, whether it's playing early computer games or magic or poker, that as you say, you're looking at the probable chance of winning, of looking at all the variable outcomes, seeing how you can get ahead there. And people do that in every single computer game they play these days. They pick up an axe that has 1 to 10 damage versus an axe that has, you know, guaranteed 4 damage. And it's like, well, which one should you use? So you're always evaluating and optimizing. And I think that that's certainly been a theme in my life. And it comes through the passion and gamer culture that we have at Luckbox, ability to try and figure things out. You know, like, can you outsmart the bookie? If the odds are, you know, 1.2 on a match, do you think that's incorrect? Do you have more information potentially? And how can you kind of make those decisions? It's the same as the trading mindset. You know, it's the same as mathematicians and gamers the world over. So I think it's just a really good way of looking at the world. I'm a little bit biased.
How did you two meet?
We were doing C-suite search, and for several months, actually, one candidate genuinely stood out head and shoulders above the rest. And in fact, I remember our recruiter saying, I don't know if you can get him. He's too good. I knew from the very first interview that I was going to do everything that we could to get Thomas on board, that this was definitely the future leader of Luckbox. If, heaven forbid, I got hit by a bus or anything, I'd know absolutely that, you know, there was a fantastic succession plan in place. And now I couldn't be happier to have Thomas moving from Chief Customer Officer to CEO and taking Luckbox forward for the coming years.
That's pretty high praise. Do you remember the first interaction you had with Quentin?
Yeah, I do. I just have to say that Quentin is the master of introductions. Like, it's really good for my ego to hear that all the time. I'm going to miss it. No, but yeah, of course, from my side, like, I'm a gamer too, and I wanted to build video games since I was very, very young. I've always been on one leg in video gaming and one on the iGaming side, so to speak. I wasn't planning on taking a job, actually. And it was my wife who convinced me, like, why don't you pick one of these ones up? And, you know, it's going to be, she knows that I like to work. So it's pretty much on that route. And then it happened to be Quentin. With my background, I've always been dreaming about doing something right in the middle between these two, video gaming and iGaming. And what Quentin proposed was, like, spot on, right there in the middle. And that's, I got super excited about it, and pretty much immediately realized that I have to do this. This is what I've been waiting for all these years. Yeah, and here I am, and it is just as exciting as I thought it would be.
Personality-wise, are you guys the kind that like to build and move on, or are you guys a stabilizing force where you can set up shop in one place for a long period of time?
I've done both, let's put it that way. And in this case, like, this is something I've been dreaming about doing for a long time. So it's a lot of passion into this. And I would be very surprised if it would be a short stunt. Like, that's not what I have in my mind at all. This, we can build this company to something huge. I mean, we have all the ingredients there. Like, we have the team, we have the platform, and we have the growth plan set. to a large extent, I've done this before, and this is my chance not only to work with like my dream and my passion, it's also a chance to do all the things that I've done successfully in the past even a little bit better.
Quentin, how about you?
Well, I've never been in a company for less than 3 years, I think. So for me, my wife will be the first person to say this, like, I almost obsess about things. Not, you know, I just put all my energy and all my heart into it. And, you know, I'll be in the swimming pool doing laps. And instead of, I'll just be thinking about, well, what can we do to optimize the business or work or keep going? So I just don't have any other way of doing things. Like when I played Magic the Gathering, everything that I touched was lists of card combinations and decks. And when I played poker, it was, you know, sitting there for hours with friends working on analyzing historic hands and seeing whether we could do better. 8-9 years at PokerStars, again, seeing what we can do to make it grow. And it's been a little over 3 years at Luckbox, taking it from a fewer than 10 people startup to a company that's 50 plus people in, I think it's 11 countries around the world, operating in 80 countries, that's got 80 million in the bank, cashed up and is public. It's been, you know, and Luckbox isn't going, it's going to the moon. You know, this is a fantastic time here.
Quentin, I just want to ask you a little bit more about you being a part of the poker scene when it exploded. Like, you were with PokerStars at a time when I never thought that I would sit there and watch 2 hours of poker on TV, but I would, because I got engaged with the personalities. And then all of a sudden you started to watch the play. And as a viewer, I would start to look for tells. I mean, that's how enamored I got with it, which kind of correlates to what you are doing in this spectrum. Did you bring some of that experience from the poker world and watching it ascend the way that it did into what you're doing now?
100%. I mean, that was one of the reasons why I loved the opportunity in the first place. Like Thomas, you know, gamer background, gambling fusion, but really it was, you could see it at the tipping point, something that was about to explode in an industry, the gambling space, which is be a little bit stagnant and on the traditional side. And yet here was this vibrant product with a new audience that, you know, Gen Z, Gen X, that was struggling be acquired and monetized by the traditional gambling space, and it was booming. And we thought, you know, I just looked at everyone thinking, we take the same best practices, you know, doing things right, being as compliant as possible, putting your customer first, and you take that and the experience decade in the space to esports. Well, look, here we are 3 years later, and so far the bets worked out.
Gentlemen, I'm going to finish up with this one. It's a question that I ask every single person that I interview. Take me to a place at one point in your life where you thought, how did I get here? And it's an interesting question because some people will talk about something very subtle, the delivery room with their wife. Some people say that they were hanging out with Derek Jeter, the New York Yankees. So Quentin, I'll start with you. And then Thomas, I'll finish with you. Take me to one moment where you thought, how the heck did this little kid all of a sudden grow up and get here?
Wow, that's a great question.
I mean, it's very recent. Like, I had that experience, that exact thing I was thinking last week. You know, because now I've been in the role as CEO for like, last thing was 1.5 week or something. I was doing back-to-back meetings, radio interviews, all kinds of stuff. And like after the last meeting, which was a radio interview as well, after that I just walked out on the veranda and I was like, what am I doing? Like what happened? 2 weeks ago, everything was calm. I had my growth plan. I was going to execute on that. And then now suddenly I'm doing interviews and it was so many, I didn't even remember who I didn't even know who I was talking to. I was just one after the other. And it's like completely surreal experience. Lots of fun. Recently I had that feeling actually.
Quentin?
It was, I don't know, a year and a half ago, and I suddenly realized I was CEO. And for all your career, well, certainly if you're ambitious, you always think, hey, how do I get that promotion? How do I move the way up? And I had gotten there and had been CEO for several months, and it was business as usual. You're responsible for the people, this business, and you want to do everything you can. But I'd never taken a moment to appreciate that I'd kind of achieved a life goal. It was always just looking at whatever the next problem and the next opportunity was ahead to realize that actually, you know, we were 30, 40 people at the time. It was like all these people with this vision that we're on, we're all here together and somehow I'm helping them achieve it the best that I can in a role that I maybe thought was, if not unattainable, certainly far away. And it happened and I hadn't even kind of reflected on it until months later. So it was a lovely feeling.
You guys are industry leaders, and it's a pleasure to get both of you at the same time. Your time is invaluable, so the fact you gave me half an hour of yours is great. Thank you both.
No worries.
Oh, brilliant interview. Thank you so much.
Thank you, guys. We'll see you soon. Love it. There is nothing more engaging for an interviewer like myself when you learn as you're going through a conversation. Great stuff. And you can find them on the TSX under the name Luck. All right, let's wrap up the show. We're going to be back tomorrow with your Wednesday edition of Sports Bar Radio. Please review, subscribe, like, all the usual things that you do to try and get this podcast up to the top of the food chain. But we have been thrilled with the response that we've gotten over the last couple of months. It has actually exceeded all of our expectations. Equity Guru has been so great behind the scenes, making sure that we can get this out to the masses and to people like Jay Swing, my producer, my brother from another, and everybody over at Equity Guru, from Chris Perry to JP Chung, Galen, and of course, the straw that stirs the proverbial drink, Priscilla Choi. I'm Rob Fay. We'll do this again just a couple hours from now. I hope you've enjoyed it. This has been Sports Bar Radio, presented to you as always by Equity Guru. Have yourself a great afternoon.
Sports Bar Radio was brought to you by Equity Guru, investment information for the new generation. Visit us at equity.guru and let's make some money together. Please note, any mention of companies on this podcast is part of a promotional campaign, and the information you hear should be a part of extensive due diligence. As well, always get advice from an accredited financial advisor before you make any investment decision. Protect yourself.